This week on Diowa, we're in Worth County. There's a shootout in rural Iowa between a teenager and a deputy.
Welcome to Diowa, the first Iowa-focused true crime podcast, where there's 99 counties and a murder in every one. These are your hosts, Beth LaValle and Allie Tulin.
Worth County, Beth.
All right. I feel like Worth County should have a really cool slogan.
You know, I don't think I found one, but if I were to create a slogan for Worth County, it would be something like, because you're worth it.
Okay, it was pretty good.
Thank you.
So have you been there?
I actually have been there. I went to a friend's wedding.
What about you? That's fun.
Yeah.
What was it like?
Very small town, quaint, but still, isn't it close to Cerro Gordo?
Yeah, right next to it.
So like, yeah. Still have the big city nearby.
That's nice.
But I loved it. Would go back.
Yeah, I think I've maybe driven through Grafton, but not too much time spent in Worth County at all.
Well, I do know that Worth County is a really small county, like I said. They have just over 7,000 people in all. And the Grafton Depot is an old train station that used to route to Chicago, Milwaukee, and St. Paul. So it's now a historic structure. But it was used to really help the economy by bringing in consumer goods and selling agriculture products. And the depot closed in October of 1974, which was one of the last small town depots to close in Iowa. It's now a two-story local history museum, and the first floor remains how it was when it was a depot, with local history artifacts on the second floor.
Very cool. I like trains.
Yeah. What'd you learn?
My only fun fact that I found, nothing against Worth County, is that there's a really cute, like, old historic movie theater in Northwood. And it's my dream to one day live in a town where I can walk to a really cute movie theater where they make homemade popcorn. I guess not homemade. Well, it is homemade, but, like, you know, some movie theaters just have the real popcorn.
I have a suggestion based off this dream.
Yes, I would love it.
I think you should move to Neola, Iowa. They, like, restored their old theater, and it's called The Phoenix.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
What if on our RV trip we just do movie theater stops?
Love it. Let's do it.
Crazy. Yeah, because I love, like, Fuller Cinema or Varsity Theater in Des Moines, but obviously Des Moines a little big.
Yeah, that's fair. I like this stream, though.
Thank you.
Well, let's get to the murder for today. It's 1998, which means super strappy dresses, baggy jeans, and mini skirt suits were in. Does it sound familiar?
Love it. My favorite kind of style.
Yeah, it's basically everything that's trending in fashion today.
Yeah, it's all coming back.
But 1998 was also a tough year for Worth County. It's a really small county, and they weren't used to much violent crime, if any, and within a year, they had an elderly woman who was bludgeoned to death, and then this case.
Yikes.
Yeah.
So this case starts with Jake Giles. Jake was just 18 years old, and he was a 1998 high school graduate, so he had just graduated. He had three brothers back home in Virginia Beach, Virginia. His father said that he was a great student and a good son until recently.
So Jake must have felt some newfound freedom after graduating high school because he took a joyride to Iowa on September 9th of 1998 and stopped at the local Manly, Iowa video store, a 1998 classic.
Love a video store.
Right. But he attempted to rob it. He ended up getting away with just $49.50. And as he was fleeing the scene, a police officer attempted to pull him over. Giles then slammed on his brakes, got out of his van, ran toward a tree, and as he was running, continuously shot at Deputy Chris Myers, who was back in the police car. Giles and Deputy Myers had a shootout, where Giles was behind this tree and Myers crouched down behind his car door, about 20 feet apart from each other. Giles shot Deputy Myers in the right shoulder and right leg, and Giles escaped on foot and disappeared into farm fields.
James Prince, a 23-year-old man near the scene, ran outside after he heard shots. He said, quote, "I saw the guy shooting the deputy. I was yelling at the deputy who was behind the door of the patrol car. He had already been hit in the leg, and I don't know if he got any shots off. You could tell he was shot when he fell."
Deputy Myers was then taken to the hospital and treated for his injuries, while the rest of his crew searched for Giles. More than 70 officers from 6 Iowa police agencies, the Minnesota State Patrol, a plane, and helicopters took part in the manhunt. U.S. Highway 65 was closed for a time during the search.
That is a lot of people.
It is.
So then, on September 10th, 1998... Jake Giles was caught by authorities in Kensett, Iowa. North Iowa police spotted him as he walked down the road near the Manly Grain elevator. They quickly found out that his minivan was stolen in Virginia Beach. They found a semi-automatic handgun and a Social Security card belonging to a Jennifer A. Jordan, who was at the time a missing 16-year-old girl from Virginia Beach. Jennifer, whose mother owns the stolen minivan, was last seen in Virginia Beach with Giles.
A quick turnaround. Deputy Myers was released from the hospital just 2 days later on September 11th of 1998. He's actually the son of a Kossuth County Sheriff's deputy, and his brother is a Denison police officer. So he said that this kind of action was, quote, in his blood. He said the whole event went by quickly. He returned 7 rounds to the suspect's 14 rounds, but then his gun jammed. Deputy Myers said that the suspect presented absolutely no fear and no regard for his own safety. The whole scene lasted about 15 seconds. Hundreds of cards and letters of support were sent to Myers in hopes that he recovered quickly. At the time, he said he was mostly bored at home waiting to fully recover.
A letter to a newspaper from a Mary Holstead, who was a citizen in rural Kensett, was even submitted. That's how much citizens cared about this. She said, quote, "I feel the Worth County Sheriff's Department and the surrounding community's law enforcement personnel who assisted in the hunt for Jake Giles deserve a huge round of applause for his quick apprehension last week in Worth County. It is nice to know we can live in safety and raise our children safely with these people looking after our welfare. I'm sure that all of Worth County would join me in wishing Deputy Chris Myers the best in his recovery."
On September 12th, Giles was charged with attempted murder and robbery and was held on a $1.5 million cash-only bond. The room seemed tense as this charge was placed upon him. Giles was in handcuffs and leg irons, and more than a dozen police officers were present wearing bulletproof vests. He would be tried as an adult and could face up to 50 years in prison.
According to the Globe Gazette, quote, "Virginia Beach police said that a request has been made for the extradition of a juvenile from Worth County authorities, but that Virginia law does not permit them to identify the person," unquote. He was wanted for stealing a handgun from a Virginia Beach residence while armed with a baseball bat 2 weeks before. Again, according to the Globe Gazette, according to the criminal complaint, the gunman, quote, "fired repeated rounds of gunshots at Myers in an intentional attempt to kill him."
On September 15th, Giles' father issued an apology. He said he didn't know why his son was in North Iowa or what might have caused him to allegedly break the law.
So Giles pleaded not guilty. He waived his right to a plea hearing and requested a speedy trial. It was rumored that Giles may claim reason of insanity and diminished responsibility. His defense attorney, John P. Lander, said, quote, "It's really not a conclusion. It's a potential defense that may exist. I don't know at this point whether it will be our defense. Essentially, insanity is a complete and total defense to any crime. A person claiming insanity cannot be convicted if the person suffered from a deranged state of mind or if the person is incapable of distinguishing between right and wrong," unquote. It was reported in newspapers that at the time, Iowa Code placed the burden of proof on the defendant in the event of an insanity defense.
Deputy Myers made a full recovery and returned to work in the winter.
So then the trial was postponed for many reasons and many times. It wasn't until May of 1999 that a hearing was scheduled and it was expected that Giles would plead guilty. In exchange for his guilty pleas, prosecutors dropped 2 theft charges and reduced the robbery charge from first degree to second degree. According to the Globe Gazette, Belleville, who would have prosecuted the case with the Iowa Attorney General's office, said, quote, "We didn't make these decisions without the victims being involved. They were comfortable with what we were going to do," unquote. However, that hearing was once again postponed.
Finally, on June 14th of 1999, Giles pleaded guilty of attempted murder and second-degree robbery. In exchange, prosecutors dropped two theft charges against him. Deputy Myers had asked the judge to deny the family members' request for leniency in order to send the message that shooting a police officer will not be tolerated. Giles apologized before being sentenced, saying, quote, "I realize that what I have done was senseless and inexcusable." The judge also said Giles' actions were inexplicable. Quote, "I can't help but try to find some logic at what you did, but I am at a loss here. It is blatantly obvious that you intended to kill Deputy Myers."
In August, he was sentenced to the mandatory 35 years in prison. There was a dispute whether the 25-year sentence and 10-year sentence would be held consecutively, but the judge agreed that the full 35 years was needed. According to the Globe-Gazette, Worth County Sheriff David Gentz said the sentence fits the crime by saying, quote, "There's a real issue of safety for the public. I think for protection of society, I think 35 years is definitely appropriate. I think it sends a pretty strong signal that the courts and the people aren't going to tolerate violent crime." He also said, quote, "I think that should send a pretty strong message to the public and to the bad guys that no small agency is going to stand alone anymore. We're all working together."
Giles must serve at least 85% of each of the consecutive sentences, meaning he will not be eligible for release for 29 years and 9 months.
So then in 2014, Giles appealed his sentence, going back to this issue of whether he should be serving his two sentences concurrently or consecutively. He claimed that the court failed to properly and fully consider three of the Lyle factors. The three being, one, youthful behavior, two, the family and home environment, and three, his capacity for rehabilitation and change. If the state changed and agreed that the sentences could be served concurrently, Giles would immediately be eligible for parole at the time in 2014. Giles had lived in the honor unit for over 8 years, and the defense especially argued that that meant Giles did have the capacity for rehabilitation. The state admitted that it, quote, "appears harsh to order Giles, now 34, to serve the remaining minimum term of 9 years on top of the 15 and a half years he had already served as a model inmate, but contends the district court considered the Lyle factors, reasonably exercised its discretion, and properly sentenced Giles.
Giles is still in prison at the Fort Dodge Correctional Facility. His tentative discharge date is June 9th of 2028. In 2013, Deputy Chris Myers left his position for a similar one with the Ventura County Sheriff's Office in California. It's unclear if he's still there.
All right, so sorry I always choose stories that don't quite fit our criteria because this was attempted murder. But let's still talk to Taps about it.
Sounds good. Hey, Tabs, thanks for joining.
Good evening.
You too, I guess.
Yeah. You sound like Count... what's the...
Count Chocula?
Yeah, I was going to say that.
Wow.
Wow, throwback. Okay, we are in Worth County. Have you been there?
I have been there several times, but mainly driving through because Interstate 35 goes through Worth County.
Yeah, it's pretty small. Do you have any fun facts?
The longest serving governor in the United States, Terry Branstad, grew up on the Worth County line by Lake Mills.
Branstash.
I've never heard that nickname. I really like it.
You really haven't?
I don't think I have. That's a great fun fact. I didn't see that when I researched, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Well, I don't think he might not have lived exactly in Worth County, but he was right there on the line. On the west side of the county over by Lake Mills.
Cool.
As a former homicide detective, did other counties ever come and ask for your help with the case?
Yeah, all the time. Because if the suspects or witnesses are residing in your venue, they like to have a local guy with them when they're doing stuff. So it happens frequently.
Same with states, other states.
Sure. Yeah, I've done, I mean, I remember doing some stuff for Chicago, Los Angeles, you know, it just depended on who was looking for who. And they helped us out quite a bit too.
Fancy. What about plea deals? Do they work?
Well, the system would collapse if we didn't have plea deals. There is no way that we have enough judges, courtrooms, money to take everybody to trial. They make the system work because it kind of becomes sausage making, where they're trying to get people through the system. But a lot of victims are very annoyed by them or even upset by them because they don't believe they've really gotten justice from the plea agreement. Most prosecutors will reach out to victims before they make a plea agreement and make sure that they are, I don't want to say just okay with it, but just to try to get them on board with the plea agreement as it goes. The other thing is, I mean, there are some cases where the evidence might be flawed in some way or whatever, and it's a way to get a guilty plea from somebody where the trial might be questionable.
I guess I'm the resident cynic. So that's always what I think when a plea deal comes up. Do you have any stats or even anecdotally, like a guess on how many wrongful guilty convictions there were because of a plea deal?
I don't know if there were that many wrongly convicted people, but I would guess the convictions in the United States, and I'm just throwing a dart at a wall, but I would guess 85%, maybe 90% of them are plea deals. Very few cases go to trial. Now, it also depends on the stratification of the crime. If we're talking about, you know, car burglaries, obviously the plea deals are all over the place. Murders, there tends not to be as many because the final sentencing for a murder defendant is pretty harsh. And so a lot of the defense lawyers will take those cases to trial because, frankly, what do they have to lose? So it kind of depends on the case.
Moving on, for teenagers, how do you determine whether they'll be tried as an adult or a minor?
Depends on the state and the state code. In Iowa, there's a presumption if you're 16 or above that you will be tried as an adult if it's a forcible felony. In its most pure form, the ability to move a person from juvenile court to adult court is more like a set of factors that the juvenile judge takes into account. Maturity, criminal experience of the defendant, the age of the defendant, those kinds of things.
Got it.
So if they deem you as more mature, you're going to be tried as an adult?
Yeah, if they believe that you're acting as an adult, there's a tendency to waive you to adult court. Now, where does that stop? Is that a 12-year-old that commits murder or a 16-year-old that commits murder? It's a judgment call by the courts. But in Iowa, at least, there's a statute that says if they're 16 or above, they have to be waived.
I feel like we're past your bedtime right now. I'm so sorry. Can we do a quick pit stop on gun safety? Like, if someone is super adamant about getting a gun for their safety, what kind of gun should they get? And then how do they store that properly?
Well, I think there's a billion opinions on that. My personal opinion is, a shotgun is probably the best home defense weapon that's ever been invented. It doesn't take a lot of aiming or marksmanship. It tends to do the job pretty well if you have to defend yourself. But it's really a kind of personal choice. The most important thing is just the securing of the weapon inside the house, because you just never know who's going to put their hands on it or try to get to it. I mean, every gun should be locked up all the time. And I know a lot of single people or people with just adults in the house or something may not do that, but I can tell you there's no children in my house and my guns are always locked up.
What's like an alternative to a gun that somebody could have to feel safe?
You start getting cost-benefit issues with everything that you pick besides a gun, because the ability to use it. So like for instance, pepper spray.
Yeah.
A lot of people end up putting more pepper spray on themselves than on the bad guy. There are some people that pepper spray doesn't work very well on. So it's not as effective.
Hallie, it sounds like you're going to sleep with like a knife under your pillow or something.
No. I feel confident just in myself. Don't need anything.
Whoa.
Just your fists.
Yeah. So it says Iowa code placed the burden of proof on the defendant in the event of an insanity defense. Is that still true?
That is still true. And I think it's true in every state. Insanity is an affirmative defense that has to be proved by the defense.
Got it.
I thought this one was interesting because it was a young guy that kind of went on a random, erratic trip, made a bad decision. And he has been he's very well-mannered in prison and has been for years and years. And so that kind of reminded me of Paul Voss. So any comparisons or contrasts to Paul Voss in this case? Allie, feel free to chime in.
Oh, and so comparing to Doran, the stepson who committed the murder but went to Boys Town.
Did I reference the right episode?
You did. Paul Voss was the stepfather who he murdered.
It's, you give me 100 homicides and there'll be 100 different reasons why people did what they did. And there'll also be a few of them that you'll never be able to figure out why they did what they did. There are clearly homicides committed by habitual criminals, people that are involved in a criminal lifestyle. They are maybe antisocial personalities, whatever. But there are also a significant amount of murders that are just couched in the situation that the murder occurred. Domestic, family members, familial, kind of things that happen. People that have some kind of mental episode. So it's varied. I mean, you can't hardly compare people one way or the other because it's just so different because of the circumstances involved in each one. When the Supreme Court made their decision a few years ago that opened up juvenile sentencing, one of the studies they relied on in that court case was a actual kind of maturity, brain maturity study that was done on males that said that there's probably good evidence that a male brain does not fully form into adulthood until 25 or 26 years old. I mean, that kind of threw everybody for a loop. I used to tell kids in my class, in my criminal procedure class, all the girls in class know that already because they know how boys acted.
Would you say though, there is something that Father Flanagan got right that maybe isn't being done in our system today? And like that's why Doran turned out the way he did. He spent that like small amount at Boys Town.
Boys Town had an incredible success ratio, but it was also very expensive and they were very selective of the people they took in, and still, I think still are to this day. I mean, again, there's arguments on all sides of this. The juvenile court system has been long accused of being so soft on kids with crime that's why there's so many repeat offenders. Because the kids feel like they get slapped on the wrist and then they go back out and commit more crime. So it is it's a huge debate. Studies in the criminal justice system, probably for the last 50 or 60 years, probably since the 1890s when the modern juvenile court was formed in Cook County, Illinois. People just don't know how to get it right. And you think psychiatry is one of the youngest sciences that we study. We just don't know enough yet about human behavior.
Mm-hmm. Well, any other final thoughts on this one?
It's interesting that he will be up for parole. He has spent a long, long time in prison. I knew a guy that came out of Fort Madison on a murder charge after 35 years or 37 years. The culture shock of someone that's been incarcerated that long to come out into society has to be just unbelievably chaotic. So it'll just be interesting to see how he does when he leaves prison.
Yeah, I don't know how we could find it, but maybe there will be an update somewhere. I mean, I know he shot a police officer, but I do kind of want him to succeed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's in our best interest for any of these people to succeed. So
yeah, true.
Awesome. Well, thanks for joining. We'll talk to you next time.
Good evening.
Oh, hello there. As a marketer, I hate promotions like this.
Same and same.
But I love content.
Me too.
So if you like our content, give us a like, follow, share, subscribe, note, facts, literally anything you think would help us continue making Daiwa a success.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.